This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Hello again, everybody. My name is Adam Ritz. This is The Adam Ritz Show. Jay Baker joining me on the phone. Hey, Jay, how are you?
I am doing great. We're in the meat and potatoes of the summer.
We are. I hope you had a safe 4th of July holiday weekend. Did you get to see some fireworks?
I did indeed. It was great. I took the safest route and enjoyed my municipal fireworks, which presumably I contribute a little bit of tax dollars to. And I just sat out in my backyard and enjoyed them.
Oh, you can see those from your own backyard?
Yeah, we're very fortunate. They shoot our particular community's ones off in a very large park just to the west of us. So I kind of felt like life was good.
Well, I didn't get to see any, but I heard hours of fireworks all throughout the neighborhoods. I felt like I could see them because they were so loud. I felt like a scared little dog in my own little, I needed one of those weighted blankets to keep me safe from all the fireworks that were exploding around me.
Well, there are a lot of family pets that are somewhat glad that the 4th of July is over. It is really tough on some animals. You're absolutely correct.
And it's over. And as you said, we're in the meat of the summer and we're moving forward. I wanted to start today with a charity, sort of an odd story here. Hats off to Orange Theory Fitness Center in Portland, Oregon. They just committed $17,000 to charities in the Portland, Oregon region because here's where it gets weird. They had an employee, a coach they call them, the person that runs the fitness classes, that raised money through his personal Venmo account from their customers that he said he was going to give to charity, and he never did. He kept the money all for himself. So this employee of Orange Theory has been dismissed. He's been fired. I'm sure there might even be some legal problems for this young man and charges forthcoming. But the company stepped up, and the money that was given by their members, the company has promised that that amount will be given to charities from their own purse, so to speak. So Orange Theory has come through. And here's where it gets, I guess, cool again, is that the money that was stolen through this coach's Venmo account was about $12,000. And he said he had about 17 local charities he was going to donate to. And he never donated the money. Well, Orange Theory, just for easy math, they said, we'll give $1,000 to each one of those 17 organizations for a total of $17,000. So the members were swindled out of about $12,000. Not one member, but several members.
Right.
But to make up for it, $17,000 will be given to local charities. So, so the money was not lost, so to speak. The monies that were donated by those members will find their way in a roundabout way to the charities in the area. So I guess hats off to Orange Theory for coming through and doing something that they really didn't need to. And I guess there's also a little sub-moral to the story here, Jay. As you give money to charity, you know, we've talked about charitynavigator.com, the website where you can find out if a charity is legitimate or not.
Yes.
I certainly don't want to poo-poo people raising money for charities, but you might have to think twice before you give some random Joe some dollar amount through his personal Venmo account. Definitely vet who you're sending money to make sure your money will reach the charity that you intended it to reach.
That's a great point.
So a little food for thought there, a little dual moral of the story there in this opening story. Watch out who you send money to, and B, hats off to Orange Theory for coming through in a pinch and donating $17,000 of their corporate money to the charities in the Portland, Oregon area.
No, that was good. They did that. We always admire people that sort of use different innovations to help raise money for charity. Here's a woman that lives in Chaska, Minnesota. She has been a lifelong fan of books. She always wanted to work in a library or a bookstore. And she said, I've got kind of a different spin on books. She created a book truck. It sounds a little odd. You know, we've heard of food trucks and delivery trucks, but this is literally a book truck. It's a 96 Toyota van, and it's been converted literally from the passenger or from the driver's seat back with book racks. And the woman's name is Rachel Cleveland. She plans on bringing her little charity book truck to farmers markets, coffee shops, and community festivals throughout the Twin City area of Minnesota. And the proceeds from all the book sales are going to go to a couple of different charities.
That's a great idea. And I can,
I think so.
I can see the truck now. I mean, as you describe a food truck, you know, when you pop open the side wall as an awning and you're standing up there making quesadillas, she's up there librarianing.
Yeah. Yeah. Somehow she worked out a deal with a bookseller so that she's actually able to get new books at a discount. She sells them at list price and then gives the proceeds away to charity. So she plans on being out and about. So hats off to Rachel Cleveland of the Twin Cities area for doing this.
I wonder if she has any muffins or donuts, because you know, legally, if you need a food truck permit to like go to certain towns or fairs or municipalities, you need a food truck. If she sells just one muffin, that counts, and then she can sell her books.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like you said, I'm sure there's ways around everything. I just like the novelty of it, because it's just, it's something that's unexpected, you know?
It is a great idea to change. She just sell books about food, and it would be a food truck.
It would be a food truck. You see what I did there? Absolutely. A couple of interesting stories that we uncover. We love philanthropy. We love helping Americans stay safe. And this is kind of cool. Another philanthropic gift. It's from an organization called Bloomberg Philanthropies. And they announced that they have given a $1 billion, that's billion with a B, dollar gift to John Hopkins University.
No
kidding.
And
this is going to go towards defraying tuition costs for medical school students at John Hopkins University.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Starting in the fall, the donation will cover full tuition for medical students from families that earn less than $300,000 a year.
That's me and you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's most people, let's be upfront. And we also know how expensive tuition can be in general, but how about tuition for professional schools?
Yeah, no kidding. Med school ain't cheap, as they say.
Yeah.
That story reminds me, I heard this week that this is not in any way, shape, or form philanthropic at all. Or connected to the public affairs radio world, but in a slightly similar story, Phil Knight, the founder of Nike,
yes,
he just committed, quote, unlimited amounts of money, end quote, to the University of Oregon football team for their NIL, that's the name, image, likeness, to pay football players to play at Oregon. Because he wants Oregon to win a national championship so bad. So an unlimited amount of money. So I don't know if that means every football player at Oregon is going to make, a $500,000 a year. I don't know what that means, but it's similar to people at John Hopkins University now not having to pay for med school.
Well, it's certainly, if nothing else, these stories present us that there's a completely different paradigm a foot in universities, but it also shows where the power of giving goes. I know Phil may want a national championship, so that may not be as altruistic, but you and I know that these money gifts can really go a long way. According to Bloomberg Philanthropies, they said that currently almost two-thirds of all students seeking a Doctor of Medicine degree from Johns Hopkins will qualify for financial aid, and 45% of the current class will also receive living expenses. So that is a very cool story. And if you happen to be already admitted to the medical student, the medical school program at Johns Hopkins, you're probably very happy right now.
And if you didn't get in, then maybe you could go to the University of Oregon and play football.
Well, there you go. Maybe you're, like you said, your talents don't lie with medicine. They lie with crushing a linebacker. Oh, here's kind of a sad note. This is just came across our newswire as we went to press with our show. The cost of buying a new house just hit another all-time high. This is according to some new data. There's a company called Redfin. They say that the median U.S. house sale soared, this is the sale price now, soared to $397,954. This happened in the month of June.
Oh my gosh, almost 400 grand average priced house, wow.
Yeah, and that's a 5% increase from a year earlier. That marks the highest level on record and the biggest annual increase since March.
I hope it swings the other way soon.
Yeah, this is going to be tough. We talk a little bit about how inflation really can upend an economy. And this is a big story for many people because it's starting to put the ability for Americans of any age group in out of the home buying markets. By the way, if you had a $400,000 home, the average price per month when accounting for the 6.86% median interest rate, that cost now is about $2,749 a month.
Yeah, you think of the younger generation starting their families that aren't in a position to get a home right now. And, if you're lucky enough to have a home, you're sort of in the game. Now you're earning your monthly payment, and the mortgage is not just rent you're throwing away. You're investing in an asset. There's equity that is growing. And if prices get worse or stay the same or get worse, you'll still be in a position to use that equity as a down payment for another house someday. But it's just getting in the game, just getting that first house that is so difficult.
Yes.
For some of these young families.
Yeah, it's tough, and so we will continue to monitor that. As Adam just said, if you own a home right now, be grateful, and do continue to keep everything going, because obviously it's going to be helpful to you financially moving forward. Big stories in the news that began spring into summer. A number of school districts have finally put their foot down, and they're outlawing the use of mobile phones and mobile devices in classrooms.
Wow.
Have you seen those stories?
No, that's interesting.
A number of states have enacted statewide bans for school districts all across their states. And the reason why this is a big story is, you'll love this, this has become a nonpartisan problem, meaning that states that are largely Democratic, largely Republican, have both recognized that, hey, maybe we've got a little too much smartphone in the classroom. Maybe we need to start to worry a little bit about our students. Nearly three quarters of high school teachers in the U.S. view smartphones as a major distraction. That's according to a November 2024 poll conducted by Pew. Pew Research, we laugh just a little bit, but they are sort of the tried and true research company. They say that unrestricted smartphone usage can negatively impact the mental development of young people. So that's the concern, Adam, is not just the sort of repetitive, hey, I got to check social media, but it actually can negatively impact mental development of young people. I mean, that's pretty sweeping.
You know, I think about what it would have been like back in the late 80s when I was in high school. If I had a television screen, a VCR, all of my friends on video phone, video games, everything else that comes along with that phone in your pocket. If I had all that stuff at my fingertips, when I was in high school, I wouldn't have passed a class.
No. I mean, you raise a great point. You want to know how powerful smartphones are to distract students. Children ages 8 through 12, this is new data, spend more than 5 hours per day on smartphones.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Now, you think to yourself, well, that's bad. How about this? Teenagers, those 13 and above, can spend in excess of 8 hours per day. We're talking 8 hours. It's like a full-time job to be distracted by your phone.
And they're not getting any sort of hourly pay, are they, Jay?
No, they're not. All they're doing is affecting their development. That sounds serious. I mean, it's chuckle-worthy on one level and then troubling on another. And, you know, you and I have talked about that. I think parents today have a real challenge in front of them.
8 hours a day. There's not anything that I want to do for 8 hours a day. Nothing. There's nothing I like that much that I could do. Well, maybe I could sleep. I can sleep 9 or 10 hours a day, but outside of sleeping, there's nothing I enjoy so much that I'd want to do it for 8 hours every day. And that's what they're doing with their smartphones. I guess I could walk around a theme park for 9 or 10 hours, but just sitting on a – no, there's too much – the world is a big place. This is a huge planet with a lot to do and a lot to accomplish, a lot to produce. And a lot to create, and it doesn't seem like you can get much done if you're doing a smartphone activity for 8 hours every day. Crazy!
Yeah, the big concern is that we are actually rewiring our children, and now this is a phraseology from a new book, but we're creating an epidemic of mental illness, and we don't want to make light of any of that. So yeah, it's a concern. Obviously, as a parent, you want to put your foot down, but now your local school district may be outlawing phones, and that actually could be very, very positive. So kind of keep up and see if your community is doing that. We currently live in a state where smartphone usage in schools just went away July 1st.
I'll be darned. Well, good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's tough to put your foot down as a state, but they went ahead and did it. Now, I am going to share with you a story. I don't see how it could be true. I have vetted this story from about three different angles, but I can't wait to get your spin on this, Adam.
Okay.
Here's a report. It was a graphic from a report on Fox News. It went viral. It came from a survey on experiences employers have had with recent college graduates. Here's some complaints that employers have had when it comes to interviewing for jobs. Struggles with eye contact, unreasonable salary demands, inappropriate language. So you would think, okay, that stands out as that may not be suitable for an applicant at a job. I mean, if they're making unreasonable salary demands while not making eye contact, you might go, this is not the best employee.
Right.
But here's the thing that stands out, and I want to know from you, is this even possible? Apparently, a very large complaint from 19% said that recent college graduates showed up at the job interview with their parents. Is that possible? Is that likely?
I think, you know, I heard this story too. I heard that. But the thing I didn't hear that you just said is that it was 19% of the job interviewers that were asked mentioned
that's
that.
That's one in five.
One out of five interviews they're doing?
This is one out of five from those that participated in the survey. So it's not every case, but that's a significant number.
That's a sizable amount.
Yeah, especially when you compare it to the other complaints, because the other complaints sound very valid. I think that people don't always, you know, use appropriate language or don't always make eye contact if that's important to you. You know, those things kind of make sense. You go, yeah, that those are valid complaints. But a fairly large number of people who do job interviews said that, yes, mom and dad showed up with the college grad.
It makes you just wonder. It doesn't make me wonder about the college grad that brought their parents. It makes me question the parent. I can't understand a 40 to 50 year old parent that would tell their 22 year old son or daughter, "Yeah, I'll go with you." That's the age group of my daughters. And if they said, "Dad, I have a job interview. Will you go with me?" I'd roll my eyes and say no. You got to go. This is something you have to do on your own.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, it's adulting. It's everything you've been taught about how hard it is to be an adult and that you're not a kid anymore. This is one of those things. Unbelievable.
Yeah, when I read that, I thought to myself, I can't wait to run this by you.
Well, and it also makes me wonder what my job interview would have been like in the early 90s when I, you know, struggled with my tie, put on my suit, went to my first job interview. If my mom and dad were sitting in the two chairs behind me in the office, how awful that would be. That would be terrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Well, now here's a topic I think we can all get behind because, you know, hot dogs are a major staple during the 4th of July holiday. In fact, Americans during the 4th of July holiday, typically, now this isn't every American, but collectively, we eat 150 million hot dogs.
Now, wait, through the year, or that's just on the 4th of July?
4th of July. Yeah, apparently we consume a massive amount throughout the summer months, but specifically 4th of July, we eat 150 million hot dogs.
That is unbelievable. I did not partake. I had ribs and a cheeseburger, but I did not have a hot dog. Did you?
I did have a hot dog. I was kind of pleased that I just had one because they're hard to just eat one. I'll put it that way. But here's an emerging trend. And once again, I want to get your take, Adam. I feel like this is the part of the show where we're getting your take. But there is a trend of Americans that now will put mayonnaise on their hot dog.
You know, I would try that. I'm not gonna poo-poo that completely. I will try that at my next cookout, but I have not had that. No.
Well, it's caused some online, as everything causes an online debate. We don't want to use the word controversy because we're talking about condiments here. But the online debate got heated up because no less of an arbiter as Costco. Costco does not have mayo as a condiment for their hot dog because you and I know the Costco hot dog is literally famous.
It is world famous. And yeah, you can get ketchup, mustard, and relish, I believe. Maybe onions. They do have onions available, but no mayonnaise. And it stands to reason, Jay, if you can put mayonnaise on your burger, you can even dip your French fries in mayonnaise. Why wouldn't you be able to put mayonnaise on a hot dog?
Well, it's controversial, Adam, so I just wanted to get your take. You're thinking you might give it a try. They're suggesting to those that feel strongly about it to carry mayo packets in your pocket or purse. If you feel strongly about it.
If you're that over the moon for mayonnaise on your hot dog, you better bring your own mayonnaise the next time you go buy a hot dog.
You just might have to. There's a Reddit thread devoted to mayo and hot dog lovers in case you want to know more.
Yes, we are solving the world's problems today, aren't we?
Well, absolutely. Home prices are up and mayo is a thing. So where else would you learn that but the Adam Rich Show?
That's right.
Hey, here's another great 4th of July feel-good Americana story. A company wanted to find out who has the largest hot dogs at Major League Baseball stadiums, because let's face it, baseball is America's pastime. And is there anything more American? We've already identified this. Anything more American than the hot dog? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Now, the honor for the largest hot dog is gone to the home of the Texas Rangers, which has been offering fans a monstrosity of a wiener called the Boomstick Hot Dog.
Well, it just stands to reason it'd be in Texas. I mean, everything in Texas is bigger. They'd have the largest
Absolutely.
Hot dog. The Boomstick.
The Boomstick is 24 inches, all beef frank, comes topped with chili and nacho cheese. It costs a Texas size $32.96.
It's 33 bucks.
It's 33 bucks.
Oh, my. Well, I've never even seen, you know, I love a foot-long hot dog. You're saying it's 2 feet long?
It's 2 feet long.
Oh,
so
my,
they've got the 1 foot covered. They add an additional foot. It's topped with chili and nacho cheese, and it costs $33.
I would pay that.
Yes.
A 2 foot chili cheeser, I'm in.
The good news is it weighs in at over 2 pounds. So I feel like you're really getting your money's worth.
Well, you can nibble on it. You can nibble on it for 9 innings. I mean, you're going to be there for a couple hours.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to nurse it. You can't just jump in the deep end of the pool with that one. Now, here's something, and I'm not sure this is for everyone, but we love to report on trends here on the Adam Rich Show. There's a new trend in headstones where people are putting a QR code to share memories with those that come to visit them at the cemetery.
Yeah. That's something that's been thought of. I hadn't heard it was happening. A buddy of mine used to talk about when Facebook first came out, and the first, I guess, wave of Facebook users that had passed on, like family members were like wondering, mm-hmm. what do we do with the Facebook page? You know, what if we can't log into it? And my buddy and I were talking like your Facebook page should somehow be connected to your headstone so that when people visit your grave, they can scroll through your Facebook page and see what you did in your life.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. Yeah. This particular company puts a QR code on a medallion that's then placed on the headstone, and it allows visitors to view photos and videos of their loved ones.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a company called Turning Hearts Medallions. Apparently, the company only charges $100, and the company also has keychains with accessible memories, too. So, yeah, kind of an interesting technology. You know, you don't think people would find it odd necessarily, or, you know, and maybe not everybody would embrace it, you know?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a story of technology doing something good. Why not? I mean, you hear all these stories of technology, you know, making life worse or harder or more difficult or immoral. This is something I think that is using the QR code for good. I like it, Jay. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. For our listeners, we've come to the end of this episode. We want to thank you for sailing along with us. You can listen to this show and all of our previous shows in podcast form on our website. It's AdamRitzShow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit AdamRitzShow.com.